It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Let's do another one. Here we are.
Okay.
Peter's Donuts. 3 in the morning. Welcome. Hello. And welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast. The only podcast in the world is part of this complete breakfast. With milk and juice.
You really haven't used that one before?
I feel like I have. But I also feel like I don't care. And I'm still bothered by this. All of my childhood, they were doing this part of a nutritious breakfast shit. I'm like, no, sitting on the same table with a nutritious breakfast. Like, they say, here's a nutritious breakfast with our cereal. You take the cereal out, it's still a fucking...
I always thought the same thing. I thought, wait a minute, if you take the cereal away...
It's still a nutritious breakfast.
It's perfectly fine without the cereal, yeah.
And what breakfast needs fucking Fruity Pebbles and toast?
Well, nobody eats anything but this. I mean, that's the whole point of eating cereal is you eat a bowl of cereal.
Yes.
You don't have time for all the other stuff.
Yes. But theoretically, some protein, you know, stuff like this, fine. Why do you need toast? Toast.
I don't.
Crumble it up. Call it cereal. I mean, what the hell?
Part of this complete breakfast.
Yeah, I fell for that for the longest time when I was a little kid. I'm like, oh, see, it must be healthy. But I'm like, no.
I don't think I ever fell for it.
Presumably, it didn't make a damn bit of difference if we fell for it. They were convinced our parents would fall for it, which means our parents must have been way stupider than we realized.
I don't know. I often wonder about how this all works because I've often said that...
They probably still do it. I just don't ever watch programs that have cereal commercials.
What I was going to say was I've often wondered if you went back in time and got an ad executive from the 50s... and showed them commercials today. Just commercials. Didn't show anything else. If one of the first things they'd ask is, why are these commercials obviously geared toward people who don't have any money?
Yeah.
Namely kids. Because you've got commercials here that are, you know, where the content of the commercial is insulting the parents, talking about how stupid they are, showing them being stupid, or just in general, clearly focused on the kid who doesn't have any money. But then again, I mean...
I think the argument has always been that the kid then wants to, and the kid then whines.
I realize that's... But what I'm saying is, I wonder if the ad executive asking this question would show a change in our society where in times past, you couldn't count on the parent buying a kid something just because they asked for it or whined about it, and now you pretty much can. But
I don't know
if that's
earlier commercials.
Yeah, I don't. The more I think about that, and I think about the commercials that were on when I was a kid, no, they were pretty much. I mean, they never showed parents being stupid or kids insulting their parents.
Yeah.
I mean, you get that a lot in commercials geared towards kids these days, but they were still geared towards. I mean, these commercials were geared towards me.
I still think there were even commercials where they're like, "Your parents won't get it," but this is.
Yeah, I don't remember anything like that. I just remember it showed a toy. It showed kids your age and usually your gender also playing with it.
Yeah.
And the idea was that you would go ask your parents. And when you think about it...
In fact, a lot of them would say, ask your parents.
Yeah. When you think about it, that's a really weird thing to do is to spend ad money focused on the person who doesn't have money on the off chance that A, they'll ask someone else to spend the money, and B, that those people will spend the money.
Well, and again, they don't base it on psychology or anything. They base it on what they think were the previous experiences. But no, I hate more the lies, because they still do this. My favorite, well, I have two favorites. I have one commercial favorite, and I have one PSA favorite. commercial favorite is, you know, nowadays they have to do the side effects and all that jazz. I remember when that started, because the first commercial I saw where that was required was an Allegra commercial, and I was like, why would anybody buy this? They just told me all this terrible shit that can happen to me. And it was only later I found out, oh, wait, all the drugs are required to say that now. But I loved one where they were like, the side effects are blah, blah, you know, you get a second head and die and whatever. But they said, and in clinical studies, most of these side effects were mild or moderate. And I'm like, so what you're telling me is up to 49% of people in this study had more than moderate side effects. You're like, less than half the people died. That's what you're telling me.
Well, and also, do I even want a mild version of any of these things?
Not necessarily.
Mild,
like,
diarrhea, mild vomiting,
but
mild.
But even then, they're like, don't worry. Because you're like, okay, it does do that. But don't worry. It'll probably be mild or moderate. Where, like, where is that? And then the other one that always pissed me off, because, of course, I'm always about this, is a particular one with demonizing of marijuana, which always cracks me up. And there's one, and it's a very serious one about people fucking dying and shit. I think it's a guy going to one of those grave markers of a kid he killed, like, to say he's sorry or something. But they say, of people tested for drugs after, basically in fatal crashes or something like that, of drivers tested for, I don't remember when, but it's basically in some bad situation, of, in which we tested drivers for drugs.
Mm-hmm.
One-third of them came back positive for marijuana. I'm like, okay, so you're telling me the majority of the people were on some other shit. Of the ones you checked, of the ones you thought were high, two-thirds were what, drunk?
Well, and it could be the other
group... Or just group, crazy?
Could be the other group was drunk, too. They just also happened to be high.
Yeah, like...
tested positive. Like, what else did they test positive for? Did they test positive for anything else?
I'm like...
That's a very vague statistic.
So, basically, you're saying we went trying to find dangerous pot drivers, and one out of three times we did.
Maybe.
I'm like, so less than half the times you were specifically looking for that result. It wasn't like, you know, just in general. No, the ones that we really thought that's what it was, we were still wrong most of the time, but sometimes we were not. And don't get me wrong, I do not think you should be high and drive. I do think it's more dangerous, and you also should not be drunk and drive.
Yeah.
But anyway. So here we are. Oh, if you're just joining us, welcome to part two. Not of this episode. Go last week. Anyway, if you're just joining us, here's the deal. We have a hat. It's magical. It has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. People should write that address. Do it. Cool people do. You should also. themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Write it with comment, topic, question. Also good. Those things. Put them in there. And the hat magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifests physically within the hat itself. We, its loyal but snarky servants, draw those cards out at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the whole show.
And he's Tony.
And I'm Tony.
And I'm William. And this is episode 178.
Complete breakfast.
Yeah, thumbs up. Tony has his thumbs up.
I'm doing like an end credits freeze frame.
Yeah, it is. Too bad other people can't see it and enjoy its wonder.
No, I think it's okay that other people can't see it. So So I just made William listen to some Icelandic post-rock.
It's good. It's good. Like I said, it sounded really familiar.
They stole your stuff.
No, no. I think it's kind of like what you were saying about it, that, you know, it sort of reminds you of things you were listening to in the late 70s, early 80s.
I feel like a lot of European pop and rock, to a certain degree, feels like it ties more to what I think of as 80s music. I don't know why. Because, I mean, it's very... Like, a lot of the stuff he does would not have flown in the 80s. Weird.
Well, you know, it's...
But it still just has that connection.
It seems like there are... In Europe... Like, there's a lot of techno in Europe, for example.
Yeah.
That sounds just like what you would have heard 20 years ago. It's like... in Europe... Well, it's like in general, in the West, if something is a hit at any period of time, there's always someone in Europe that still likes it. Do you know what I'm saying? And that's true in the United States, too, actually. But because of the way radio stations are run and all corporate and everything, you pretty much only hear the same music over and over again. And if you're not into that, then you just have to put things on your iPod or whatever and listen to that. But in Europe, you can still find a radio station that'll play whatever you thought was cool in 1976, 1987. You know, there's some new band doing something that sounds almost just like it, which I think is actually cool, because there's a lot of cool things that, you know, that were really neat at the time, and there are ways you can still make that music and maybe even update a little bit, like this band has done, and yet it still feels like it's in that kind of...
I would genre. Like, every once in a while, because you'll hear it now, too, and be like, wow, this really has an 80s vibe to this new song or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
It's an homage. And I always like to be like, okay, so imagine I'm in, like, 84, and I play this for somebody. Are they like, this is pretty good? Or are they like, what the hell is this? Or are they like, this is awesome? Like, I always like to think, is it really that 80s? Like, how much, or is it really that 90s, or...
No, that's, know, that kind that's of, true. That's
I always
true.
Like, I was, and sometimes the answer is, yeah, no, this would totally fit in.
Yeah.
And other times it's like, no, there's homages here, but there's bits to this that are way too modern.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Other times there's like, yeah, no, this guy's talking about his dick way too much for an 80s track. That sadly comes up way too often.
But I think...
that instance, not that guy's dick. I don't even know that guy.
I think
oh my God,
European music is a little more... diverse is what I'm saying.
So I'm at work.
That's a good thing.
I'm at work the other day.
Okay.
I'm at work most weekdays. It's my job.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a question for a woman who I work with that I sent over. We have an instant messaging thing. And I sent her the question. And it's one of those, you know, most instant messaging things have like a bit, like it's this color when you're there and it's this color when you're away. And it's this color if you don't want to be disturbed, that kind of thing.
Sure.
So her said she was there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those, like, it turns to away after, like, 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sent her the thing, and, like, 2 minutes later, it changed. I was like, oh, damn, she was already gone. She didn't answer me. I go, well, this woman happens to be married to another woman. This other woman I also know and happens to work right in the same area. So I eventually am going to lunch. Because it's time. And I'm leaving, and I'm walking down some stairs, and it's 2 flights, so there's like a little turn. And as I'm going down the flight, the wife of this person is coming up the other flight.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're kind of buddies, so I'm like, hey, where did you put your wife? And she looks up at me, and she is not the woman I thought she was. And she does not look pleased at me. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I thought you were someone else. Which, that part is what a normal person does.
Sure.
But I'm me. I'm a jackass. So, as she passes me heading up, and I pass her the other way, I turn back, and to her back, I say, I have no idea where you put your wife. And then just keep going. And I'm like, why did I even... I don't even know why I said that. It just happens because I'm an asshole. And I told the two actual wives later, and they both thought it was the most hilarious thing ever. And then I saw the one later in the day, and I'm like, I'm not going to talk to you because I'm not confident as to who you are. So, William, how has your week been that you haven't experienced yet?
It's been good. Great week.
I've been on Weight Watchers for like 3 days.
Yeah.
4 days.
I'm probably, as this is airing, I'm probably at the Iowa State Fair, so I'm probably pretty happy.
I have lost, enter in post-production, pounds already.
I'm so proud of you.
Yes. I expected it to be more like, enter smaller number in post-production, pounds. But it's actually, enter larger number in post-production, pounds.
Well, I'm not surprised. I knew you could do it.
Yeah.
I knew you could do it.
Of course, some of that is because I lost a toe.
Well.
And it was a big one. So I figure a fair bit of the weight.
Yeah, I suppose.
I should say, it wasn't my toe. I keep a different, very large toe on me all the time, such that in the past when I have been weighed, it has always included the weight of this toe.
Sure.
I recently lost this toe, misplaced.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's around here somewhere.
Yeah, probably.
And therefore, my weight reduction reflects the weight of that toe, which, as I said, is significant.
Mm-hmm.
That might be the weirdest bit I've ever done.
I think it might be.
All right. So, we just go to the hat. I think we got nothing.
Yeah, I don't really have anything.
All right, then.
To talk about that anyone cares to hear.
Bad news, people. We're going to actually do what we say we do on this show. Bad news number two. The birthday's in Pakistan. Here's your ticket. Make your own way back. See you again. Never. Never see you again.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I know, and it's disappointing. Soon I'm going to have those back, and I'm going to lend them to you.
What back?
The tape, the DVD of Cobain's concert and the DVD of Pete Holmes' concert.
Hard hat number one, Mark McKibben.
Hard hat number one.
Is the successful launch and docking of SpaceX's Dragon module, which, with the International Space Station, the beginning of the commercial takeover of the U.S. space program, and if so, is that a bad thing? Well...
Was that question abridged?
No.
I feel like Mark really wants his question to be abridged, because holy shit... That was a long way to say things.
I don't know. It seems also, pretty people, succinct to me.
People don't need to add stuff like, how do you feel about that? Why do you think that? What? Because we'll always talk about it. That's the point. We don't ever actually, unless it's a really dumbass joke,
nice
we don't ever go.
I think it's nice to ask.
That's because you're a terrible person. Anyway, you should talk about this because I know neither know nor care what the hell he's talking about.
Well, for some time,
go, Spacehead.
For some time now, although I've only recently realized that this has been going on myself, NASA has been cooperating with private groups NASA has a couple of missions planned in the future. One is to grab an asteroid for some research purposes. I mean, ultimately they want to go to Mars, but most of their projected, you know, missions and everything they're doing to get to those missions involves cooperating with private companies who are developing spacecraft. You know, in particular SpaceX, and they're not the only company though. As part of getting ready to cooperate with these private companies in sending, first of all, sending modules that are developed by these companies, like the actual craft the astronauts will be in are developed by these companies, but also recently a launch center that belonged to NASA has sort of switched hands, and now it's being run by a private company. So the capsules developed and built by a private company. The launch center is going to be operated by a private company. This is all part of NASA's long-term plan. Obviously, someone somewhere has decided that the only way NASA's going to do big things like get to Mars is if they cooperate with private companies to develop these technologies and to fill these roles. I mean, again, it's not just they're not just building modules. They're actually going to be running the launch center. I mean, running it.
Well, and it doesn't seem that weird to me because the military's been doing this forever.
Well, the military has had private groups developing technology and developing weapons and so on. But, you know, the public is probably more used to that because they don't think of soldiers as people who invent things or develop technology, just that use it. So who's going to invent these things and develop it? Well, you know, private individuals, that makes sense. Although the military does have an R&D group, too.
Yeah, yeah. And don't get me wrong, NASA's full of geniuses. However, these companies can pay really better stuff and have viable commercial impetus to get the best shit going.
Well, this is kind of the point is, I mean, and I
love this plan. I mean, I don't think government oversight should stop, but I think this is a brilliant idea.
And I don't know what brought it about. I mean, you do have people that talk about how, you know, how long it's take. You know, we went to the moon back in 69 and then in the early 70s, and then we never really went back, and it doesn't seem like the space program did very much in the meantime. So some people, I think, probably believe that this move on the part of NASA is because, well, they're just not getting it done. So we're going to start bringing in these private groups that seem to do a better job of moving this technology along and developing these things and creating a timetable that NASA as a kind of a government organization just doesn't do as good a job at achieving. But I think that overlooks the fact that, you know, thanks to people like Carl Sagan and a few others, for a long time, philosophically speaking, there really wasn't a lot of emphasis on manned space travel.
I mean,
when you look at NASA after the moon landings and things like that, Well, for one thing, you know, the shuttle was going up. It's low Earth orbit, but there was still a lot of stuff happening in the shuttle program and in the various space station programs, including the current International Space Station programs, that are kind of giving us knowledge about how we would make that next step to Mars or something. And that's very complex. I mean, it makes sense that it would take this many years or almost
absolutely
this many years
and
to figure out.
It makes sense that the general research would be done by groups like NASA.
Yeah.
Once you want to make it viable and reproducible,
yeah,
then you go to people who have a vested financial interest.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, that said, I do think that the philosophical dominance of, well, we don't really need to send people out. I mean, that's expensive. That's dangerous. We can send probes out. That was Carl Sagan's kind of philosophy, and I think that maybe that did hold back us going to Mars or something. But I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it's very good that we've had we've sent some things to Mars to take a look at it, you know, to kind of give us an idea of what the place is like. I'm not along with the people that are disappointed with the progress of the space program, because if you back up and look at the bigger picture, it's had enormous success. There's been a lot of progress in terms of the probes that have been sent out and the planets that we've visited and the moons that we've visited.
And lots of cool research and technological development that honestly just isn't that sexy, so you don't hear a lot
right
about it.
There's really no reason for us to feel in a big rush to get to Mars or anywhere else. But at the same time, it does make sense, as you've pointed out, that you know, now that NASA feels comfortable, or you know, whoever it is feels comfortable saying, okay, maybe we need to not just send out probes and put up orbiting telescopes and things like that. Maybe what we also need to do is go to Mars or actually send people that they would turn to some private companies that are doing really good work in R&D and developing some really interesting technology. I mean, it seems like it makes sense. It's hard to find any fault with it.
Well, but it does walk a line because there are a lot of things. There are a lot of things that people discuss privatizing that come out of the government that get controversial. And I can understand a lot of that. This is not one that I feel that way about because we're not talking about the welfare of the populace is not the issue here. Those are the ones where I'm like, let's not give them to enlightened self-interest corporations. You know, but I'm like, this one, I'm not sure what the downside would be in this case.
Well, and Mark's talking about corporations taking over completely. So let's consider that. Let's consider if this is the beginning of the end of an organization like NASA because private enterprise is going to be doing this. What would be the downside?
Here's what's going to happen. Private enterprise is going to do it largely. Okay, there is a possible downside. Here's what most likely is going to happen. The shit they're going to do is the shit that people want. So they're going to be inventing cool shit. They're going to be finding ways to send people on vacations to the moon and all of that shit. And that's fine. And then once that's been established, NASA can buy a ticket and go up there and do all the research they want. The only downside we get into, potentially, because at this point, I see the space race, if from a commercial perspective, as a consumer-based issue. If it becomes a resource-based issue. If they go up there and start strip mining the moon for something.
Or asteroids.
Then it could get shitty. But as long as we're talking about figuring out how to get into space, figuring out how to colonize space, it's going to be based on what people want and what people are willing to pay for, and that's awesome. And NASA can just be a customer like everybody else if they want to do more research up there.
Well, I think I would speculate that NASA's never going to go away.
I would agree. You at least have a dude. It's like the government person on going to space.
Well,
it's too closely tied to the military anyway.
Yeah, well, there are just national interests, is what I'm saying. Yeah. That NASA would continue to be an important player here, and not just say militarily, because like you were saying, the military is really involved here, and there's going to be that aspect of it, but also for science and technology, I just think you're always going to have that.
New flavors of Tang.
And if also, I would say that if NASA was not currently cooperating with corporations for this, if NASA was doing it all by themselves, it would only be a matter of time before corporations would be doing all this stuff anyway.
Yeah.
So whatever downside to corporations being involved in space there is, that's going to happen. It's NASA, cooperating with NASA or not, isn't going to matter. So I think that I right now I don't see a downside. I don't see a downside in the future. That's not going to happen anyway. You know, one thing about space travel and anything, any benefit you can get from space that will probably always be true is it's going to be really expensive. And there's only going to be a small group of people who can directly benefit, eventually, who can directly benefit from, you know, sending robotic miners out to extract minerals from asteroids or whatever. So space is going to be a way for the top 1% to get richer while a lot of other people probably don't. And I don't see how even NASA, even being
we're a long ways off from being able to make communal space.
Yeah, I mean, it's just how it's going to be. Now, some things that might sort of fight that tendency has nothing to do with whether or not corporations are involved or NASA's involved or both of them together. It has to do with the development of technologies that are cheaper that can get you off the planet.
Oh, yeah. The whole thing's an economic barrier to entry.
Yeah.
Anything we're talking about here is horrifically expensive. Yeah. Once that stops being the case, then we can start making shit for the people, by the people.
Hard to imagine it ever not being the case, though. I mean, there's some technology. For example, let's say space elevators. You know, they talk about that.
Yeah.
The initial expense is a lot, but once it's built and once some time passes, a ticket onto the space elevator to orbiting station might not be that much, and then it might be reasonable for, you know, even middle class people to use this technology to get out into space. But there are a lot of technological challenges. I mean, to whether or not that's even a viable technology at all.
Yeah.
There are people talk about ways to get up there that wouldn't involve huge, heavy booster rockets. But that's, you know, that's a technology that we really don't know how to do that. So it could be that it's many years, or maybe we never quite figure out a cheap way to get up there. And if we don't, again, space and anything that has to do with space is going to be solely the domain of really, really rich people, or, you know, the government.
I told you not to watch the movie Elysium.
Now, that said, I suppose that if people demanded it from their politicians strong enough, and if they were willing maybe to pay a little bit higher taxes to get it, the government could provide, what am I trying to say here, provide... why is the word leaving my head? When the government helps pay for something.
Subsidy.
You could get the government to subsidize an average person's trip. But again,
so adorable right now.
What? What?
This version where society demands of their politicians, we want to be able to afford to go into space, and we're willing to pay higher taxes for it.
This happens.
This does not happen.
Oh, yes, it most certainly does happen.
When have the people told their politicians, we want to go into space, well, and we're willing to pay higher taxes for it?
No, not this particular thing, but to communicate to politicians about some other thing. For example, in at least in not so many words, people communicate to politicians that they want their food prices to be a certain level.
Oh, yeah, no. I agree
and
with
that
the concept.
Leads to certain types of policies being put in place.
I agree with the concept that the people can speak to their politicians and influence
policy. Also, healthcare. There are a lot of people who expressly tell their politicians, please, charge me more in taxes if it means
we can
get single-payer healthcare. There's
however,
a lot of people who say that.
That number is much smaller.
Yes, that is a small number of people.
There are a lot of people who say, I want healthcare. The people who say, and I'm willing to pay more taxes for it, is much smaller.
Yes.
And then you add in the fact that we're not talking about health care. We're talking about, I want to go into space.
No, because those people who want health care but they don't want to pay higher taxes is because they want health care to be cheaper. And that's perfectly reasonable, and it would be nice if the government would do something about that. But I'm just using it as an example. There are a few people who want a single-pay system, and they're willing to pay more in taxes for it. And so you could get the same thing.
Well, yeah, I'm on that list.
You could get the same thing with space travel. You could get some people to say, hey, I don't mind paying a little more in taxes if it will allow me to have the same privilege as richer people do in terms of access to space. A sizable group, a population of the electorate could say, you know, we would like you to treat space and mineral rights to particular aspects of or particular areas of the asteroid belt, for example, we would like you to treat that like the U.S. government treated land in the West, west of the Mississippi. You know, when it wasn't just sold to a bunch of rich people. You know, there were people could ordinary people could get land grants or they could get claims, and we would like you to do that again so that ordinary people can get a little piece of the asteroid belt and then, you know, give us some subsidies so we can send our own, you know, automated mining outfit or whatever to see if we can strike it rich. Because those things have happened in the past with land and gold prospects and everything else, and the government could reasonably do that again. But, of course, the money required would have to come from the taxpayers, and they would have to be willing to pay higher taxes for that to work.
All right. So,
well, or
talk to your congressman
or
about getting your own asteroid.
The electorate could say, and the way you could pay for all these subsidies is to raise the taxes on the rich folks who are already going out there and making tons of money on their little piece of the asteroid belt. You know, and
such a fresh-faced boy.
Well, these are things that have kind of conceptually, at least, happened already in history at some point or another. So there's every reason to expect it could possibly happen again. So, you know, that's a possible route that this could all go.
If
but
you also think William is cute, go to the blog and tell him themagicaltalkinghat.com.
It is probably more likely, though, that rich people will benefit from it, and middle class and poor people just will be too busy watching television and using their mobile devices to care.
That's my plan. I forgot two things I was going to talk to you about before, last week.
Oh.
Today, but last week. One, are you watching Defiance?
Not at the moment, no.
Okay. I thought you liked it.
We did, but I didn't know. We just haven't gotten around to it.
I haven't seen it yet, but it's all on my DVR.
Yeah.
Also, last weekend, or not last weekend, a few days ago, that might have been last weekend, I don't know. I bought coconut milk ice cream.
Yeah, good stuff.
I had never tried it. I told the cashier, I'm buying this because I have a vegan friend who swears this is as good, if not better, than dairy milk ice cream. And I want to try it so I can go on the internet and tell him he's full of crap. And I'm going to, regardless of how I actually think it tastes. Because that's how our relationship is.
Yeah, right. That's how you roll.
So, I went on the record, you're full of crap.
Okay, on the record.
That being said, it's not bad. There is a factor.
Okay.
Coconut milk, and consequently, coconut milk ice cream, still tastes a little like coconut.
Yeah, I guess.
There's a hint of it there. I bought chocolate. Coconut milk ice cream.
Sure.
Chocolate. That's I don't remember the brand.
That's usually what I get, too.
It still tastes a little like coconut.
Yeah, I guess so. I do.
If you don't like coconut, this could be a problem.
Yeah, that's,
and there are
that's true.
A surprising number of people out there who are really anti-coconut. Although for some, I think it's a texture issue.
Almost as many who don't like beets.
I feel like not that many. but a lot. But I think in a lot of cases it's a texture. And there's no bits of coconut in it.
No, it's not that.
But as long as you're comfortable with that, it was quite good. And I would go so far as to say, if you consider dairy milk ice cream as a whole product, yes, this totally fits within there.
But maybe not compared to, say, a gourmet ice cream.
It's not necessarily, it's not my new favorite ice cream.
Yeah, yeah.
There are ice cream brands that are going to win against
Yes, yes, yes.
But there are plenty of dairy milk ice cream brands that I think are perfectly fine that I'd say this is better than.
Yeah, yeah.
It was quite good.
Yeah.
It was also quite fucking expensive.
Yeah, very expensive.
Damn.
But I would totally agree with you. I mean, if I were comparing it to, I don't know, say even a Breyers, because I used to really like Breyers.
My family was big on Breyers. My family did tests.
It probably doesn't stack up to Breyers.
We did tests. We did one time with vanilla, and we did one time with chocolate, where we got Breyers, Dryers, which out here is called Edie's. Same company, though, because the logo is exactly the same. But here it's called Edie's, out there it's called Dryers, and that was the big competition. Those were sort of the two premium ice creams. And then we would get the house brand from our local supermarket.
Sure.
And I believe in every case, Breyers won. Breyers definitely won on vanilla.
Yeah, it's really good vanilla.
And I think
ice
it
cream.
Won on chocolate as well. The producer's fairly anti-Breyers. I'm not 100% sure why. I think we've talked about it, but I didn't listen. So.
Well, there's a thing about Blue Bunny in Iowa because it's an Iowa company.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I always liked Blue Bunny ice cream, but I didn't feel like it was, you know, fantastic or something. And Breyers had the benefit also of, you know, they had that ad campaign where they talked about how, look, you could pronounce everything.
That's there were like five things in it.
And that actually was pretty cool. And and it did taste better, I thought.
I would tend to agree.
So,
and they had some interesting flavors at times.
Yeah, so I wouldn't, and so I would agree if you were to compare coconut ice cream to that, no, probably not going to stack up to that. But you know, for your average, you know, ice cream that you might buy at the supermarket that's not, say, a gourmet or not special like Breyers,
I
think it stands up to any.
It's tasty.
Of those. Yeah,
I liked it.
Unfortunately, there aren't very many flavors, though, and like you said, it's expensive.
Yeah, I think I saw, like, vanilla and chocolate, and I was like, vanilla sounds boring. Chocolate is a good generic to work with.
Their vanilla is pretty good, though.
I'm sure it would have been fine. But.
Not bad. But chocolate, and I think there's two more, and I don't remember, but not very many.
I wasn't seeking it out. I was going down that aisle, and I saw coconut milk, and I was like, hey, here's my chance to mock William again.
I think the only people I know that make it is So Delicious. They used to be called Soy Delicious because they made just soy products, but they started making coconut
now
milk
it's
products.
Called soy, now it's called So Delicious because it's mostly made out of sod.
No, because they make coconut milk products also. So Delicious, what they call themselves. I don't know.
It sounds like you said cocaine milk products.
Okay, well, if that works for people.
I'll bet it does.
Maybe you want to draw something else out of that. Because people are probably totally bored. Even Mark was probably bored by my speculation
like,
about.
Damn it! Talk about Batman again.
Space travel.
Mark, you're on a roll. Dear Tony and William, not Ezzy, because he hates Ezzy, because he's an asshole.
He doesn't hate Ezzy.
He does not. I think he likes Ezzy better than both of us.
Yes, put together.
Most people do. Assuming. Money is no objection, which I'm not sure is the right way to phrase that. What would be your ideal, what would your ideal vacation be? Parenthetical, I hear Tahiti is quite the magical place.
Nice.
Fuck you in your face, Mark, for that lame joke. But assuming money is no objection.
Well, I think we've actually even...
That's not even...
talked thing, right? about this before.
So money is no object.
Well, that's what people say. I mean, for me, it's always about, you know, sort of a genealogical quest to find the places my ancestors lived.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even have to necessarily be in Europe. I mean, there's plenty of places in the United States that I have not been that I'd like to visit. Places where I know some of my ancestors are buried to go see where that is. But Europe would be cool too. It would be great. I mean, one of the things I've often talked to other people about and I've dreamed of doing in terms of genealogy vacation is actually finding out where the Wrights in Northern Ireland came from and going there and maybe meeting some of my cousins over there. That would be really nice. But I would also enjoy
finding when you split off from the Lefts.
Going to other places in England where I have ancestors from and southern Germany and Switzerland. And, you know, it's really not, I realize that's not a very interesting answer, but whenever I think of traveling, it's really all about genealogy. That's my main interest in traveling.
When I used to think of travel, it was about cultural discovery. Nowadays, it's about being treated like a fucking billionaire. Places I still want to go. I mean, there's places I want to go back to, but in terms of places I've never been, I very much want to go to Asia, particularly Japan, if I can pull it off. I would love to go there. Lots of little islands, but basically, if you ever watched the old Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous show, and saw the ones where they would talk about hotels and resorts and stuff, I want to go to all of those. I want to go to the places where it's like, we carved a suite out of this mountain and you've got one butler, he lives down the hill and he will bring you anything you want. Literally, you ask him for the severed head of a local, he will bring you one, all inclusive. That's the kind of place I want to stay. Also, I hear Milwaukee is nice.
There are a few places of historic importance I might be interested in going to, in specifically in, say, China. Probably Japan, too.
Various countries in Africa. I want to go to Japan, but I'm really mad at Japan. Or, sorry, not Japan, China. I want to go to China, but I'm also really mad at China, so
I can think of awkward. Lots of places I'd be interested in visiting in China.
I'm less mad at Japan, so.
South Africa, Ethiopia.
I don't know why. I've never had an interest in Africa. I have an interest sort of in the Mideast, and then so Northern Africa kind of intrigues me. But in general, it's never been my thing.
Alexandria and Egypt would be interesting. You know, just there's just some places of historical interest in all of these places that I might be interested in visiting, but it doesn't really... If I think I'll go my whole life and never see these places, it doesn't really bother me. I feel just a little bit of regret if I never see places where my ancestors grew up. And I don't know if that's narcissistic or something, or if it's just... Part of it is that I am the kind of person that is perfectly happy where he is, you know?
Yeah.
And we live in a time where if you want to see someplace else, it's...
Comparatively, it's very easy.
Yeah, you can experience a lot of something without going there. I know it's not the same as...
No.
But if you're a homebody like me, it's pretty much good enough, and you can just stay where you're at.
Also, as somebody who's been to places of significance, it's usually not that significant. And then you go someplace else, and it's way significant to you. You don't control that stuff. So ultimately, what I probably would end up doing, if I had no objection to money, is just travel a lot. And the places that are really going to do it for me are not the places I'm going to be expecting.
Yeah, that's probably true.
But that's the thing. You go, I mean, you see the pictures. Say, give me photographs of Thailand. And you see some gorgeous shit. You're not going to go to like, oh, this is the biggest Buddhist temple in Thailand, and that'll be the thing. But it'll be a place where somebody took one of those fucking pictures.
Because
those pictures are amazing. My great one was in the Lake Country in England, on top of a hill, looking out over the whole thing. I also went to Wordsworth's house, Dove Cottage, went through it. It was kind of cool. Didn't move me that much. Standing up on that hill, holy shit.
Well, okay, and I've been to Moscow, and I've been to St. Petersburg, which was Leningrad when I was there. Yeah. And we went to the war memorial there. Except that I went on that trip, it never would have occurred to me to go there.
Yeah.
But it's one of the most significant experiences I've ever had in my life. So, yeah, you're exactly right. A lot of the times, the places that are going to have the most significance to you are just the places you happen to
Amsterdam.
Go or happen to be.
Amsterdam's amazing. I mean, for obvious reasons, but also... Well, it's also got more, I think it's got more museums per capita than, like, any city. Mm. It's got a shit ton of museums, which are cool, too. But just the city, just walking the streets of the city is amazing.
Yeah.
I think a lot of European cities, and I've probably talked about this before, but it feels like an old, old European town. Like, cobbled streets and everything's just old. And then there's just modern shit on it. So there's just like neon signs hooked to this building that's like older than my great-great-grandfather, older than this country.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just such this amazing sort of techno fairyland thing that's very cool to me.
Yeah.
And that's not, I mean, you know, I went to some museums. I went to shit like the Sex Museum and the Torture Museum, and those were amusing. But I didn't go to, like, see the Van Goghs and shit. Admittedly, now I'm kicking myself for that, but it was the city that was just amazing to me.
Mm.
So, yeah, probably would just travel a lot.
Did I tell you, you know, speaking of the fair, which that's probably where I am, as this is, people are listening to this.
As we speak,
he's
trying really hard not to sniff a butter cow.
I performed there. Well, yes. lots of times when I was growing up.
In fact, you tried to find a loophole so you could perform there multiple times in a year.
Back in 93, I think it was, my then wife and my friend Chris, we had a band. And
Pilot Fish.
We performed in the gazebo in the agricultural building.
Oh, did you really?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
We called our band Late for Dinner.
Oh, I thought this was Pilot Fish. Did Pilot Fish come later?
Oh, Pilot House.
I know, but I like to say
me and my friend Chris, that's our band, but this was like a cover band, you know. We were playing...
But it was the same Chris.
Yes.
Okay.
And my wife. And we were just playing covers. So we called ourselves Late for Dinner because we couldn't figure out what name we wanted. But we knew that expression, call me whatever you want, but don't call me Late for Dinner. And we thought, if nobody else wants that name, we'll take it.
Ah.
So...
You could have also gone with Adolf Hitler because since the war, nobody wants that name
that's
either.
That's true. So one of the songs we did was Starry Night, Don McLean's song about Vincent Van Gogh. Well, now I was not just performing in the Ag Building; I was working there, you know, collecting garbage and, you know, making sure the restaurants in there had enough ice and things like that. And actually, before the fair started, we decorated the place. The theme was, you know, like there the agricultural building has these steel girder supports, and we wrapped cardboard around them and painted green so they look like big corn stalks. And I made this spider web out of twine that we put up over one side of the building where there's some stairs, and we put a big old garden spider up on it and everything. But so anyway, we performed Starry Night. We performed every single night at the fair. And
not just the Starry one.
Yeah, several songs that we covered, like Fleetwood Mac and a few other people, Dan Fogelberg. And Starry Night
You're
was...
You're really on the cutting edge here in 93.
This is just what Chris and I have always done. And so we did Starry Night. And I was...
What are you going to do when Gordon Lightfoot comes creeping around your backstab?
So, but then I was working after performing, and a gentleman came up to me, and he said, and he introduced himself, and he said he was from Holland, or the Netherlands, you know. And
that's usually what they call it.
And he said he heard me perform and sing a song about his countryman, Vincent Van Gogh, and he was... so moved by it. And I thought, oh, that's really nice. You know, and I, but that's probably the best.
And then he tried to sell you weed.
No. It was very nice. That's probably the nicest compliment I've ever received from anybody about a performance was this guy saying he was moved by, you know, here he is, he's visiting the United States. He's at the Iowa State Fair and he's sitting there listening to a band cover songs. He's probably never heard in his life, but he hears this song about Vincent Van Gogh. And he's like, it you know, stirred some, all, you know, patriotic and, you know, proud things and whatever. Oh, it was really nice that he even took the time to tell me that while I'm collecting garbage around the building. But that was pretty cool. I don't know why I decided to tell that story.
Do you remember there was a website called Weeble Stuff that I used to hang out for a little while at and I would make you watch? And there was a song on there about Kenya.
Yes, I remember that.
Where come the lions?
Yes, yes. Only in
only
Kenya.
In Kenya.
Yes, yes.
Forget Norway. Well, I have a coworker who is from Kenya.
Okay.
And one day, we're talking about this and said, we know this silly song about it. And so me and this other guy who knew at the cafeteria table start singing it. Where come the lions? Only in Kenya. Mm-hmm. Come to Kenya, we've got lions. And it goes on like this for a while. He didn't say anything. He smiled and nodded.
Okay.
And then later, he sends me an email that consists of a link.
Okay.
And it is a link to a YouTube video of a 1972, maybe, or something, performance of, what's his name, Robert Whittaker, singing Kenya My Home.
Oh, okay.
The famous guy who... Well, he was an explorer, right? Or he was a missionary or something?
I really don't know who you're talking
but
about.
But he's a guy who... He's a British guy who ended up going to Kenya. And it sort of is a major figure for them.
Okay.
And he sings the song, Kenya My Home. It's a very patriotic song for them. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. He's sharing, you know, his songs. And so I send him a link to the video of that one.
Yeah.
And he's laughing and he says, oh, okay. He says, there was a pronunciation thing. I thought you were saying liars.
Oh, God.
Where come the liars? Only in Kenya.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm like, I seldom say this, but even I am not that big of an asshole.
Jeez.
I'm like,
jeez.
I wouldn't do
so
that.
So he thought you were calling everyone from Kenya a liar, while you were singing that song.
And his entire response was to send me Robert Whittaker singing Kenya My Home later, like a half hour later. Yeah. But he just smiled at the time. I'm like, wow, you are too polite.
Yeah.
I'm like, anybody that I don't, that I've known for like weeks and say that his home country, that's where all the liars come from.
Not Norway, but Kenya.
Unless they're Canadian. Then I'll totally say that. You can just punch me. That's fine.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, I'm so glad I sent you that video then. That would have ruined all our future relationship.
Yeah, but yeah.
Damn. All right. I want to wrap it up because it's getting hot and I'm getting tired.
Okay.
And we're almost at an hour anyway. Ezzy, do you have anything to say? She is losing her shit.
We're
she
almost out of videos. I think people listening to this
are, I know,
can go watch our ninth one, and so then we just have one more for that.
Time to cry, people. You can watch the last one next week and think of William at the State
we're
Fair.
We're not getting a lot of feedback. Sergito liked...
Sergito is a subscriber now. Mark's a subscriber. Jasmine's a subscriber. She comments occasionally.
Like one of our videos, he expressed his love for us, and that was nice, but not a whole lot of feedback on him.
To be fair... That's where we live, is not a whole lot of feedback.
Well, I mean, I'm curious to know if people are interested in us doing any more, because...
Yeah, let us know.
It, you know, if you're not, then we won't.
But
if you are,
then we will. Please write the hat. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. Also, like us on Facebook. Write your congressman about subsidizing your space travel. And come back next week and we'll do something again. All right? Talking to you. Are you coming back?
I'm coming back, yeah.
I'm not talking to you.
Oh, I thought you were talking to me.
No, I'm talking to them. I can't hear the listeners.
Okay, sorry.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.